Good afternoon and welcome to the Financial Markets Insights podcast, where we explore the people, ideas and innovations shaping the future of financing technology. Today, we're diving into a pressing and ongoing challenge for financial institutions, how to train, accredit and enable software developers to be productive from day one in environments that demand speed, precision and resilience. Joining me today is Michael Clark, the CEO of Mallin Associates. For more than 30 years, Mallin has been a trusted partner to some of the world's leading financial institutions in the delivery of practitioner-led training, process documentation, and certification programs that empower software developers to contribute more effectively and more quickly. In today's conversation, we're going to be talking about the financial industry's broader training and accreditation needs, why off-the-shelf training doesn't cut it in financial markets training, and how Mallin Associates is redefining what it means by productive from day one. Welcome, Michael. Thanks for joining us today. Let's dive straight in. From your perspective, Mike, what are the biggest challenges financial institutions face today when it comes to training, enabling, and getting the best from software developers?
So I think there's a range of things that are sort of causing challenges in this area. I think sort of inconsistent onboarding is one of the first things that we see. If you think about, you know, across an organization, you often have tribal knowledge in certain areas. You have silos within the organization. You have differences in the onboarding experience, the training that individuals get across different offices, across different locations globally. And so this is one of the first things I think that sort of feeds into an impact in general on productivity. Junior hires, like graduates, they're just not ready initially for the sort of professional environment when they come out of university. And so providing a rigorous foundation for them is really vital as part of the onboarding process, and that needs to be consistent. And then when you think about lateral hires, sure, they're familiar with professional environments, but what they don't necessarily have is the deep institutional knowledge that your organization has about your proprietary technology stack, your proprietary frameworks, and so on. So I think there's an inconsistency that we see with onboarding. Then there's sort of the fact that, of course, institutions are looking to have the quickest turnaround to developers, to hires, to be productive, right? They want them productive from day one. And so they come up with all sorts of ways to try and measure how effective this is. And I'm not necessarily convinced that always they use the right KPIs, right? If you think about something like time to first commit, sure, this tells you that the developer pushed some code into a repository, but it doesn't tell you about the quality of that code. It doesn't tell you whether or not that code was any good. And so I wonder sometimes about the nature of the metrics that are used to try and measure whether we're onboarding successfully. So what do organizations do? Well, they look to try and train their staff, but they try to do that with as minimal a cost as possible. Okay, so they go for a generic online training, you know, e-learning content and those kind of things. And there are places for that. But what they lack, again, is that deep institutional knowledge that an organization has. So we miss out on the understanding of the proprietary systems, of the internal technology stacks, of the reasons that a company has built their software the way that they have, the reason they've picked one technology over another, the infrastructure around all of their technology stack. So using off-the-shelf, non-proprietary training to try and upskill staff, it just doesn't cut it in terms of getting productive, not just from day one, but yes, from day one, but then giving developers, whether they're laterals or whether they're graduates and new hires, the skills for their whole career at that organization. On top of this, we've seen over the last couple of years a real push towards hybrid approaches for their staff. And this idea that staff can just learn through osmosis, well, it's not really a great policy to begin with. Let's just let people work it out. You know, we have to be supporting them. But it's even more difficult where people aren't together, where they haven't got the same connection to learn from each other in the way that perhaps they might have been able to in the past. So all of these sort of things, from inconsistencies in their onboarding, you know, this desire for people to be onboarded faster and sooner, this need for real deep understanding of an organization's technical stack and the reasons that they've picked particular technologies and the way that they work with them, including the stuff that they built themselves, this sort of inadequacy in generic training, and then this drive towards hybrid working, all leads us to this situation where what we need and what organizations need are real contextualized, embedded training that is going to support junior hires and lateral hires.
You make a very good point. So yes, training courses may be plenty, but if they're off the shelf or remote or people are ticking boxes, what you're not getting, and you've made a very strong point, it's about structured learning and accreditation. It's about actually understanding the client's business model and technology model sufficiently that you can give detailed and specific training. But I'm particularly interested in the points about measuring how well someone is taking on that learning, because rather than just saying they attended a course or they completed a static questionnaire, in your case, you're offering something a bit more specific in terms of demonstrating how the software developers have taken on the knowledge that you're imparting.
Yeah, I think having something that's measurable and quantifiable, where we can really show the engagement of those people who have been on the training programs, is vital to prove the capability of the people who are coming out of the training. I mentioned that organizations are coming up with their own ways of measuring how successful that their training might be. For example, time to first commit. Another example is time to first pull request. And again, what these lack is a quality metric. They give us this indication that you can write some code and you can deploy some code, but they don't tell us how good that code is. Was it thrown away? Did it actually end up in production, for example? So what we need is we need other ways to validate knowledge. That's not, yes, these are useful metrics, but we need other ways to validate knowledge, to validate engagement with training programs. You know, having a training program that might be generic, where we don't look at the code that a developer has written, where we don't provide feedback on what the developer has written and how they've approached problem solving, does not develop those people. All it does is show that they were able to write some code that produced, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It doesn't tell us how good that calculation was that came to the value 1 + 1 = 2. And so obviously what we want is to provide, you know, real structured programs where we're gathering data throughout the program. So we're gathering information about, you know, were they engaged in the materials, looking at the materials, working with the materials that we have? Were they participating in tutorials and other activities with their cohort, with the instructors? The code that they were writing, were we actually looking at that code, understanding the approaches that they were taking and giving them feedback iteratively so that they can improve that? You know, we need to be thinking about the things that we can measure during the programs, instructor engagement with the students, that their engagement across the cohort with their other students and the activities that they might be doing, the quality of the code that they're writing, giving them regular feedback on that, iteratively giving them feedback, looking at how they've approached the problems and solved the problems, guiding them in ways to solve the problem that might be even unique and proprietary to the organization. So there might be a way that one organization solves a problem internally. They might have frameworks that help with that, that students should become aware of and understand the rationale behind this. It's all about improving, not just, you know, can you write some code that does 1 + 1 = 2, but can you reason about the code that you're developing? Can you understand it in the context of the organization that you're working with? Can you use the frameworks and the proprietary tooling that the organization works? And what metrics and ways can we use to try and capture that? And this has, you know, lots of benefits for the graduates that come in. We can take graduates and we can prove to an organization that they are now ready. They're ready for day one. You know, a 1 month training program can often provide a better foundation for a graduate coming into an organization to make them more effective than 6 months of osmosis learning. If we look at lateral hires, this kind of training, it doesn't necessarily have to be the same length. It might even only be a week or two, or delivered in different mechanisms, but it provides them with a foundation and understanding of the technologies that they're working in, the environment that they're working in, the proprietary choices that the organization has taken. And all of this then leads to helping with retention, helping the organization keep the people that they have trained. If we invest in people, then they are more likely to stay with us. If we provide them the training they need, they're more useful to the organization and you're more useful sooner. They have greater opportunity to move within the organization, mobility even within the organization. And if they leave the organization, they become an advocate for the organization, for the technology stack that the institution has, and many of them boomerang and come back. And when they come back with even more skills. So structured programs that capture this kind of information, proving that people come out of these programs with the skills, the understanding of the technology of the organization they're going into, are going to be more productive. And that is going to benefit the organization.
And the employer too. I have very limited knowledge of software development and or training of software developers, but years ago in the Y2K for Argo, I know the company I work for measured performance by writing 6 lines of code an hour. And it was repeatedly pointed out that nobody had any clue whether there were 6 lines of rubbish code, but as long as they hit, so the motivation of the individual was just to hit 6 lines of code an hour target, regardless of whether it had any value. And also customer service desks, you know, or the phone gets answered in 3 rings, which is fantastic, but not if the person who answers the phone can't resolve the question. So that leads us on to, I think, the fact that Mallin Associates has been described as not just another trainer, which is evidently what you're describing here, because I think the key to what your solutions are that you are very much practitioner-led. This isn't those that can do and those that can't teach. These are people who in real life have held roles in financial institutions and have been at the coalface of this type of software development and technology. So that's clearly a very important part of your approach.
Yeah, I think Mallin Associates, as you say, practitioner-led training is what we do. The people that we have at the front of the classroom, running tutorials at the cold front with the students, they are real-world practitioners. By that, I mean, yes, we pick people who can communicate well, who can push through ideas, help graduates and laterals understand, but also people with real experience in the industry, real experience writing code, solving the kind of problems that our students are trying to solve. And not just that they did it 10 years ago or 20 years ago, but they're still doing it today. So they're up to date with the latest ideas, the latest ways of approaching and solving problems. And I think that's really important because, you know, you say those who can't teach. Actually, no. In order to be able to teach something, to really be able to get the understanding of what's happening across, you have to be the very best. You have to have a real deep understanding of a technology because you never know what you're going to get asked. You have to understand technology, understand rationale, understand the way things work to a much deeper level than when you're just writing code or when you're just building systems. So in many ways, one of the best ways to actually really learn something is to teach it. So that's what we do. Our trainers are real practitioners who solve real problems, who have real technical depth. They're not people who, you know, can't do it anymore. They're still doing it. And then I think we also look at trying to then take those practitioners and really embed them into the organization so that we become part of the organization that we work with. We try to be enablers from within, you know, not this vendor that's sitting on the outside. We want to be real partners with the companies that we work for so that we get, again, that deep understanding of their technology stack. Everything that we strive for at Mallin Associates is tailored. It's not generic. You can take any programming language that you like or any technology stack you like, whether it's Java, Scala, Python, C++, whatever it happens to be, or frameworks like Angular and React. You can take any of them and you can teach them in a very generic way, or you can take those frameworks and you can teach them within the context of the organization. So there might be parts of the framework or the language that aren't allowed in the organization. There might be replacements for libraries that you might use outside of the organization that you wouldn't use inside the organization because they've got their own low latency version or they've tweaked it somehow. So even in a generic context, there's an opportunity to teach and to tailor to the proprietary use cases and environment. But then on top of that, fintechs, banks, hedge funds, they have proprietary technologies too. They have their proprietary trading systems and whatever else, and processes that fit around that. So a good training program, again, whether it's for laterals or for graduates, is one that captures that information and distills that information as well as the understanding of the technology. And so that's what we try to do at Mallin Associates. We try to use the combination of the real proprietary technologies, infrastructure, processes that an organization has. Yes, we bring in bits of the generic, but we customize it to the proprietary needs of the organization. And then we deliver that with practitioners who are at the top of their game still, writing and solving these kind of problems themselves.
That's a very nice segue. We're just about to go into the use cases, but just before we do, one of the comments that you and I have talked before is that you understand the client system sometimes better than the client themselves, because your relationship with some of them has gone on for so long that you are absolutely embedded. So not only are you delivering embedded enablement, you are embedded within the firm. And I think one example you gave is that you've sometimes found software issues in the process of learning about the client, becoming acquainted with how the client does things, that you've actually found issues that they didn't know were there because you are practitioners.
That's right. That's right. So it depends on the size of the organization. But if we look at some of the large organizations we work with, they often, we talked earlier about this silo and tribal knowledge. What you often find is that there's maybe a team working on one part of a system, a team working on another part of a system, and then a third team working on another part of the system. And they have a deep knowledge in their silos of their bit of the system. And they're really down in the weeds and they understand it. But what they sometimes lack is the overall comprehension of how all of those three different bits fit together, interact with each other, the interplay. That becomes really important when you start to think about failure modes and how these things can break and maintenance and all those kind of things. And, you know, the interactions between these systems. What we do is we go in to these organizations and we will spend time with the SMEs in each of these teams, and we will build within our organization a deep knowledge of each of those applications or components, right down to the very low level details about how they work. But then we'll do that across the application as well. And so even where you have SMEs who are, you know, they're super focused on exchange connectivity or order routing or something, we can even teach those people about their own systems. And we often do. We often do actually go into these organizations and say, look, actually, this is how all these bits connect. This is your bit that you're working on. Yes, you're the expert in your bit. But actually, look at how all these other bits connect. And let's drill down into some of the details of these other bits so that you've got the depth. So again, for junior hires, they get the full picture. They get the detail and the depth of the bit they're in. And for lateral or senior, even senior devs who've been with the organization for 20 years, they're getting a broad spectrum overview of how their bit that they've been focused on all fits together. So that's kind of one example. Another example is exactly what you say. We become so embedded in the organization that we need to really understand the technologies that we're working with. And so that means that sometimes we push client systems when we're trying to get that depth of understanding in ways that they've never been pushed before. So we have some clients where we have literally found bugs and caused their software to be better. So there's the organization is getting better engineers through the training. They're getting better documentation because we're documenting all of this. We're making it available in a format that they can process, that they can understand, that they can share, that they can all consume, that builds other resources that they can use. But we're also validating their technologies for them. We're actually improving their technologies. We're giving direct feedback on ways that they could be. And you know, that's enabled because we're practitioners. If we weren't practitioners, we wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, or if your model was fire and forget, you just ship you in, do a bit of training, bugger off. Can you give some specific examples of some clients that you've worked with? You might not be able to name names, but you can describe them by size. And let's start with actually the biggie, which I know we can't mention its name, but the tier one investment bank, yeah, with whom you've had your longest professional engagements.
Yeah, so for them, we've worked with them for, I think it's 35 years now. It's a really long time.
Yeah, in our markets it is.
So for that organization, we do everything you can imagine, really. We go in, we run their graduate training program. Their graduate training program is 8 weeks long. It runs globally. So it runs in India, it runs in Hong Kong, Singapore, it runs in New York, Sao Paulo, Montreal, obviously London, Glasgow, Budapest, Paris, literally everywhere. And it all happens at the same time. And we're talking, you know, in the 300-400 students to deliver this program. That program is entirely proprietary to the organization. So we look at that organization's development environment. We look at their technology choices. We look at their infrastructure that they use. We look at their trading systems, all sorts of proprietary information that we've gained through being embedded for that period of time. And we do this training program for their graduates. On top of that, and one of the things that helps to feed into that program is technical writing and documentation work that we do for them. So we were talking about this idea that you might have siloed teams. And so we go in and we look at their systems. We write their developer documentation. We understand the depth of their processes, their technologies. We write documentation that developers can then use to understand their own systems. We come up with the common vocabulary that they can use to explain their inventions, to explain their technologies. And from this documentation, you know, we end up with a huge host of resources that improves the quality, the performance of their engineers, whether they're new hires who are laterals, new hires who are graduates, or long-standing engineers. But then that knowledge that we get from being embedded to that level feeds into all of the graduate programs and the trainings that we do for them. And then on top of that, we do specialized, completely proprietary courses for their developers across their organization too. So their internal testing tool, for example, we do training courses that you can't get it anywhere else. The only place you can get it is there. Their proprietary technology stack for trading. We know the details of their low latency stack, and we teach their developers their low latency stack. And one of the things that this also helps is it helps them keep a narrative and keep moving forwards, because as you get new people in, they lose context and they lose knowledge of why things have been built the way they've been built and how systems have evolved over the years. So when you get new developers in, they might start saying, well, why don't we build it like this? And you can say, well, actually, 20 years ago, we did build it like this. And these are the reasons that we're not doing it now and that it's been evolved in this particular way. So we actually, you're right, we end up having not just depth of knowledge, not just across, but also over time as well. We understand the history of these systems in a way that even some of their, you know, developers, they weren't around 30 years ago or 20 years ago.
That also makes you hard to replace, I'm guessing. But it's the same, actually, it's the same logic of any financial when they're considering changing their technology stack, like trading technology. Yeah. You know, that's always that big question. We might, but can we because of the transition process? So on the one hand, that's a good thing. But going back to that point, I mean, a world where everyone talks about interoperability and everything, you know, there's myriad new technologies and bits and add-ons and fix engines and other parts that might be added to the trading value chain. That's evidently very important as well, that you are within the organization so you can have a view and you can help people to assimilate and help operations teams to succeed when they're adding something new or replacing something legacy. That's presumably also very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think there have been a number of occasions over the years where we've acted not just as trainers, but as consultants in these organizations and actually being called in to validate, to provide input, to help reason about whether, you know, a particular technology should be moved forwards, whether even including proprietary technologies to evaluate internally, whether it's, you know, internal proprietary programming languages that have been developed, whether they should be used, for example. So yeah, we definitely get involved because of that embedded nature and that depth of knowledge, that length of knowledge and service. We can get involved in all of those kind of things. And obviously, that's our ideal kind of situation where we really can bring everything that we've got to bear to the organization. But there are other organizations that we work for that are smaller. But again, even with those organizations, it's all about customizable training and customized offerings. And even in those organizations where we haven't had 35 years working with them, we deliver value. So if we look at ThreeForge, for example, another one of our clients, we partnered with them to really start to develop their training material for their product. So they have their product. It's a low-code development environment, and it's used within a lot of the financial industry. But, you know, they wanted better training. They wanted better documentation of their systems, and that was something that they felt was a gap. And so we came in, we were able to help them with the documentation of their systems. We built a 20 series tutorial e-learning, all absolutely proprietary to their system, that has massively improved both for 3Forge, the amount of support calls they're getting, but for their clients. We've spoken to some of their clients about this, and they've said, look, you've saved us 50% of our sort of developer time from having to explain and understand how the 3Forge platform works. Because you've produced these videos, because you've produced this e-learning content, we're now more effective. We're now saving time as well. So it has a ripple effect as well. And then on top of that, 3Forge is another example of a client where we tested it to destruction, found bugs, 3Forge have improved those bugs. So they've got additional value add. Everybody wins by having that.
So that's an interesting start, which I hadn't thought about. The customer, your client's client, is also the beneficiary because they can have more efficient access to the services that they're being given. Obviously, it's very nice to have these huge relationships and you've identified your ideal. But to your point, it's financial market specific, but you do represent and you have worked with very big organizations through to smaller, more nimble fintechs. The common outcome, I guess, for all of these is what you've said, reduced time to productivity, improved performance, and to your point, a situation where everybody wins, which is great. Last question, and always the future-looking one, what would you consider looking ahead to be the biggest opportunities for improving how financial institutions and financial firms train and enable their developers?
Yeah, so I think we've got to get organisations building a learning culture. They've got to be not treating training as a checkbox exercise, right? They've really got to invest in changing their culture so that training is front and center, not cutting budgets for training, putting it as a priority. And for me, the best way of achieving that is this idea of let's make sure that it's practitioner-led training that's customized to the organization, that's really going to maximize that investment and enable those graduates to start quicker, to be more productive from the very first day, to have better opportunities within the organizations that they're working in, to help retention, to increase the boomerang effect of people coming back. So first and foremost, continuing practitioner-led training where it's proprietary training, really focuses on the organization and making sure that organizations are investing in that. Hybrid working isn't going away. So all of this training offering has to be structured so that it can accommodate teams that are diverse, both in terms of where they're working, how they're working, when they're working. So we've got to be able to support global organizations and global approaches to training. And, again, I think that this is something that we do very well and can demonstrate. Just look at the program we were talking about, where we're all over the world supporting this program.
And just for clarity on this, you are physically all over the world. You send your industry practitioners to wherever the client is.
We will go wherever. We do all sorts of, we do lots of different approaches in terms of that. So everything from online training via Zoom and those kind of things to physically in the room. And for those kind of programs, we're physically there. The one thing that we do try to avoid is Zoom fatigue. Because the problem with remote training in particular is people don't want to be sitting on a Zoom from 9 to 5. And so without going into too many details, like one of the things that we do is when we deliver our trainings and where we are asked to do things remotely, we're very aware of this, that that's not a productive way to learn. So if we're thinking about hybrid delivery mechanisms, if we're thinking about flexible approaches to delivering training, yes, we need to be able to be on site and we can be on site and we are on site everywhere. But we also need to make sure that people aren't on a Zoom call from 9 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, whether that's opportunities to do tutorials and group work and have periods where there's some self-study baked into the day so that there's a structure to the day that is a learning structure built to help people learn.
As you say, they could be on the Zoom, but literally not paying any attention because they've zoned out 3 hours ago.
Exactly.
I was going to ask you, because everyone's talking about it and it's part of the same looking ahead thing. So everyone's mad about AI and the AI can do it all for us. And why can't we just train AI? You could just give your module to AI and then it could run all the courses. I mean, evidently you have an answer for this.
Yeah, I mean, AI can't do it all for us. I mean, AI is a tool. And by the way, when we talk about AI, we're really talking about generative AI. We should clarify, because artificial intelligence has been around for a long time. How do you think Amazon works, right? But with really, obviously, the hype at the moment is generative AI. Generative AI, it is a very good tool at summarizing things. It's a very good tool at, you know, if you want to sort of take information and condense it down, but it doesn't understand. It doesn't really have a true understanding. It misses the nuance. And so as a training organization, we can make use of generative AI. We can use it, for example, to provide interactive chatbots that sit on top of our documentation that we write for these organizations so that it's easier to ask questions, to find the information that you need. But there's nothing quite like a human sort of in the room teaching concepts to somebody. Generative AI simply doesn't do that in the same way that a practiced instructor who's also a practitioner can do. It also, there are problems that haven't fully been solved yet. If we look at hallucination in generative AI, it will lie. It's getting better, but it will lie. And so is that something that you're prepared to risk? Is that something that you're prepared to have, that you're going to train people, but the information might not be correct? Or it might not be up to date, or it might not be the latest.
The worst, nowadays it might have a vested interest in flattering you or blowing smoke at you and making you feel empowered. No, it's not you, it's the program. So for all those reasons. Thank you so much, Mike. That's really, I mean, generally, you know, training might seem a dry subject, but I think you've more than demonstrated that for Malin, you're not just another trainer. And it's been really interesting to hear about what makes you stand out. Is there anything we missed? Is there any messages that we didn't cover that you'd like to finish with? Or
I think you're right. For us, it's about building real partnerships with the organizations that we work with. Generic training just isn't as interesting to us as real beneficial proprietary opportunities. And so that is always going to be our goal. We want to deliver the most value that we can to the clients that we work with by embedding in the organization, enabling within the organization through our practitioners. That's really what we're focused on.
Thank you, Mike, very much for your time. It's really been an interesting conversation. And if you'd like to learn more about Malin Associates, you can go to their website. We'll put the tag in and then we post the podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time for Financial Markets Insights.